Our sustainer program. Make a difference today. This is KPFT Houston.
Has his own show on Thursdays at 3 p.m., Politics Done Right. Here, I don't know what the heck we do. I'll be sitting in for Egberto tonight, so in the event that we're having a conversation that's interesting tonight, we can pick it up on Thursday, or I can use the material that I came up with for tonight's show on Thursday, because I am nothing if not spontaneous, and listening to Queer Voices on the way in, they were talking in the context of a gay life. Whether you're in the closet or coming out, the courage of coming out, the courage to be yourself. And on the way in, listening to that, you know, it's like you have someone with a speech that's like, I'm just going to wing it. And I just decided that this is a topic that I think has more universal application. It's not just for GLBT people. It's for anyone who has been shy or is or self-conscious or uncomfortable in groups. It's broadly applied. So my guest, whom I'm borrowing from Queer Voices from the previous hour, is Christina Tutt. That is her real full name, and it's not Egyptian-based. She is a licensed master of social work, and she works in topics of shame, resilience, vulnerability, and courage, among other things. So thank you for being willing to hang around for another portion of an hour or more.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, this is a universal topic.
Absolutely.
So, first, let me say that we will be inviting callers. I think that if this is a topic of interest to you, we absolutely want you to call and talk about your experience and some of your challenges. The number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. So, Christina, tell us a little about how you got into this study area and what you feel you have learned from not only studying this particular area of human psychology, but from the people that you've worked with and, I guess, treated.
So I was pursuing my master's in social work at the Graduate College of Social Work here at the University of Houston. In 2013, I took a summer course called Shame and Empathy with Dr. Brené Brown, who is the pioneer of all of this Daring Way curriculum and this work that I'm so heavily involved in now. She has spent the last dozen or so years studying shame and resilience and vulnerability, courage, etc. Not specific to the LGBT community, but as a lesbian, while I was going through that class, I just thought, you know, how powerful and how amazing it would be to bring that specifically into my community. So I worked for some time in a different job. And then took my own sort of brave leap of faith at the beginning of
tough
this.
Taking your own advice.
Oh my
it?
Gosh, you're not kidding. at the beginning of this summer, I left my full-time guaranteed paycheck job.
Wow.
To pursue this full-time because I feel so passionately about it. And so my partner and I have started a business, Inspirational Outcomes, and we are doing workshops all over the country. There are lots of, so it's, when you get trained in this curriculum, it's called a Certified Daring Way Facilitator. There are hundreds of Certified Daring Way Facilitators, maybe even thousands, I'm not sure, around the country, around the world. But I don't really know, I haven't come across anyone else who's doing it specifically for the LGBT community. And because I feel so passionately that the need is there, that's what I've chosen to focus on.
Now, you focus on the LGBT community, but what attracted me when I was coming in, listening to the back half of the show, listening to the topic, and, you know, people don't believe it when I tell them, but I have felt like at my core, I am basically a shy person.
Mm-hmm.
I am basically a self-conscious person. People that meet me now do not believe it. But there are people who will see how I react in groups of strangers who can actually see that, yeah, I can be kind of a wallflower at mm-hmm. first. It takes me a while to find a comfort level. There was a period in high school when I would have to say, and I have examples which I won't air because I don't want to bore anybody, but I mean, I would say there was a period where I was pathologically shy. I didn't actually go out on a dance floor to, you know, like, not slow dance where you just kind of use the left foot, right foot thing.
Right.
But I didn't go out on a dance floor until I was single and divorced, and I was with a group of friends, and we had gone, it was a club on Washington Avenue somewhere. I forget what it was called. Good group was playing, and essentially I was dragged out onto the dance floor. They wouldn't let me sit it out. And it was a help in getting over that self-consciousness.
Sure.
As a window covering installer, I think the scariest thing starting out, I was 26 years old, and I think the scariest thing starting out was going, first of all, knocking on a stranger's door, carrying in tools, drills, ladders, and then making holes in their walls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about this. It's bad enough knocking on a stranger's door when you're shy, but then you're going to make holes in their walls, and God help you if
no
you
thanks.
Put a hole in the wrong place.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is why it resonated with me as a straight person when I was coming in and you were talking about shame and the need to be willing to be out there and the willingness, the courage to be brave, to find the courage to be brave.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really hoping we get some callers for this topic. I mean, if you don't want to call, that's great. If you want to listen, that's okay. But I think that there are people out there that probably have been in circumstances where they just couldn't cope with a crowd, or maybe they're afraid to ask out the girl because they can't stand the thought of rejection. You know, they sort of anticipate that the response will be no. Or women who don't make themselves available in a social situation for the men they want to meet. Or just the job interview you're afraid to take. I mean, it applies in so many areas of human endeavor, whether you're straight or gay or anything in between.
Absolutely.
The number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Before the show, I mentioned that one of my favorite movies in this context is Defending Your Life. For many, many years. I think the movie is like from 1994 or something, with Albert Brooks and Rip Torn and Meryl Streep.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a terrific movie, and it has an unusual premise. It hypothesizes that the afterlife isn't necessarily about judging whether you are a good or bad person, but whether you are a courageous or cowardly person, whether you asked that boss for the raise or you chickened out, or you asked that girl out or you chickened out, or you let the bully throw your books down on the playground and never contested it. And I guess, you know, different movies, different stories resonate with people for different reasons, because I had, for many years of my life, been kind of a shy and self-conscious person. For me, that resonated. So, based on your experience with some of your patients and some of your colleagues and some of the trainings you've done, can you tell us a little about the process, how some people maybe are born with these, I'm going to call them to some extent, disabilities of mm-hmm. shyness and self-consciousness, or how some people, perhaps due to circumstances in life, become shy or introverted or self-conscious because of circumstances that have applied to them, and then how they have to work through that through their lives and try. The phrase I've sometimes used is to be the person they were born to be rather than the person that their environment made them.
Mm-hmm. So the research, you know, shows, and there's a lot of discussion in what Dr. Brown has put together, that, you know, yes, we are predisposed to certain personality traits, etc., but that a lot of this kind of stuff is learned from childhood and from how you're parented, and you know, if your mother is very overprotective and holding you in all the time, then you learn that behavior, and that's what feels safe, and that's what you continue throughout your life. And there's a quote in the book, I it's not from Brené, it's someone else, but that, you know, my mother helped me do shame for X amount of years, and then I got old enough I could do it all by myself.
Yeah. I'm going to do a quick station ID a little early so we can kind of go through the conversation with better flow. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. My engineer is Egberto Willis. He has his own show, 3 p.m. Thursday, Politics Done Right. And my guest is Christina Tutte, a licensed Master of Social Work, or as they sometimes abbreviated in LMSW. I actually find that harder to say. the movie I referenced was Defending Your Life. It's, I think, made in the early 1990s, around 91, 94. Albert Brooks, Meryl Streep, Rip Torn, Buck Henry is in it. It's really a great cast. I'm a music person, a movie and TV music person. It's got a wonderful theme and wonderful cues. It's a great film. I really consider it one of my favorite films. You can look it up on imdb.com, the Internet Movie Database. If you can rent it, if you can download it, if you can buy it, it's a great film. We have a caller now on the line. We do have open lines, 713-526-5738. And Rebecca, you are on the air. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you. So I was calling, I am a lesbian, and I'm really interested in how this work does pertain to the LGBT community. Maybe you could specifically just tell us about what you found and how it relates to our community. That would be great.
So I have not personally done the research. This is all, it's a curriculum based on the years and years of research that Dr. Brené Brown has done. I just felt compelled to bring this into our community because as I was going through the training, it was impossible for me to separate that feeling of not. The definition that she's developed from the research is that shame is the intensely painful feeling that we are somehow flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. And, I mean, if that doesn't speak to the LGBT community, I'm just not sure what does.
Yeah. I mean, I waited until I was 36 years old to come out of the closet precisely because of shame and fear of mm-hmm. not being able to have contact with my family.
Right.
How did that process go for you, if I may ask?
I'm sorry?
How did that process go for you, if I may ask?
It was tough. There was the first year of not really speaking to each other, and then we were able to all come back together. And I recently brought my girlfriend to my sister's vow renewal ceremony at her church, which we never would have been welcome a few years ago. And to be able to have my whole family together and have them accept and love her and to have, you know, everyone accept each other's beliefs and lifestyles. It's really, we've come a long way, but it's taken years of, you know, get them getting over their hang-ups about it. And you know, I love something my sister told me when I was a kid. I asked her, like, what does people mean by, like, black pride? She said, you know, pride is just sometimes not being ashamed anymore. It's not like they had, you know, they accomplished something specific. They're just giving up the shame. And so I apply that to my own life, and that's why I think the Pride Parade is a really great, you know, a great title for it, because we're not ashamed.
I take it your family was not among those families that were like, oh, we kind of suspected, but we love you anyway, and I don't know why it took so long.
Yeah,
it wasn't one of those, was it?
I know. So and I was really good at hiding it.
Really? So how did you work through that with your family? What kinds of processes, if I can call them anything nearly that formalized, what kind of processes did you go through with your family and did they go through with you in order for everybody to kind of find an acceptance and accommodation?
Yeah.
And
it took, for me, it took negotiating, really. Mm. It took, like, them saying to me, okay, you can come, but you can't bring a girlfriend to any family events. And then
that's
me saying,
hard.
Well, that's unacceptable. I just won't be there. And then a year or so of that. And then me saying, hey, you know, we'd like to come. And them saying, okay, well, please don't be super affectionate, you know, because our kids will be there and we don't want them to see two women holding hands, you know. And so me saying, oh my God, through gritted teeth, okay, you know, we won't be super affectionate, but I'm so outraged that you can ask me that. And now it's finally, they know her, they love her, and they're just, their whole, you know, outlook has changed a little bit. So now it's at the point where we can be affectionate, and they, you know, they openly ask where she is when, you know, she's not there, and they want her to be there. So I think time and compromises and understanding and love and, you know.
I think there's also an element of generational differences. Mm-hmm. My stepdaughter is 24, and honest to gosh, she just really doesn't see those kinds of differences in people. They just don't matter to her. Like, I'll look at some people and I'll point out the black guy or the Hispanic guy, and she'll talk about the guy on the left and the guy on the right.
Yeah.
It's just so much a generational thing. And I think that also for people that are really uncomfortable with finding out that a loved one, a friend, a neighbor is gay or in some other way different, that I think familiarity breeds comfort. But I think also when the larger society becomes more accepting, it is easier for individuals within that society to become more accepting. And I think that's one of the best reasons to have essentially, this is going to be interesting, I can't think of a better term, essentially public shaming of those who make derogatory comments or deliberately go out to shame others should be made to feel shame for those kinds of actions. And
an
therefore,
eye for an eye sort of thing?
Well, no. I think it's like being spanked without the physical assault. I mean, public shaming has its place, I think.
You have to hold each other accountable. And now that marriage equality is, you know, on the books in 50 states, I know my family will be at my wedding because it's legal now, and it gives it an additional status. Like you said, when larger society accepts things, then people who the last holdouts start to come around or die off. Either way, it's progress.
You know, I was once at a conference, and there was a science fiction writer there. Can't remember his name. Great, great writer. And he made a rather maudlin but extremely true comment appropriate to what you just said, that civilization changes one funeral at a time.
Yep.
Sad but true.
Yeah.
You know, older people do get calcified in their ways. I'm a liberal person. I am still a creature of my time. My wife is Chinese. My stepdaughter is Chinese. And yet I will still find myself doing a double take when I see a mixed race couple. Now, is that crazy?
That's a little crazy.
And yet,
human nature, but
it's ingrained. Yeah. I mean, I'm 64.
Yeah.
So it's ingrained in me since I, you know, could understand language. It's, and I recognize the dissonance, and yet it's automatic.
That was sort of my thought as Rebecca was sharing her story, that it's, you know, people who have never had any exposure to LGBT couples or people in general. I mean, it's you know, you only have to go on what you've been told and what you've heard. And that's why I love so much. My partner and I live in the suburbs with our kids, and it's, you know, it's very fun for our neighbors to see that we are just as boring and mundane in our day-to-day activities as they are, because I don't know what people expect, but you know, we're making lunches and doing baths and dinner time and just yeah. the whole
and bickering and
the
and,
same
and,
stuff
you know,
that
all
everyone,
the same
all
stuff.
The men and women do.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this work and continuing it and bringing it to the LGBT community.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks
all right,
for calling,
have a good
Rebecca.
One.
Thanks, you too.
Take care. Is that Arissa? Anissa. Anissa, you're on the air.
Hi.
Thanks for holding on. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, great.
What's on your mind? What are you thinking? Are you interested in this topic?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was laughing when you mentioned your mom holding you back and stifling, well...
She was talking about moms in general. We weren't talking about my mom necessarily.
Or mine.
Your undeveloped independence. And I have a similar case, but in my case, it was my dad. You know, my mom was the most liberal one. I mean, I love dad, but he was way overprotective.
And do you hear his voice in your mind as you're getting older and striking out on things on your own?
Oh, not anymore. I mean, of course, also...
okay, done that.
The biggest thing I should say is that I'm an only child, so, mm-hmm. you know, that pretty much right there will, you know, kind of show you that...
I'll tell you something interesting along these lines. My dad had a very overprotective mother. They lived in Queens, and... As I understand the story, he never learned to ride a bicycle because she was afraid he'd get hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
He never learned to play stickball or baseball because she was afraid he'd get hit by a car. He never learned to swim because she was afraid he'd get pulled under by an undertow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as a parent, as I've gotten older, I came to have a lot more respect for him as a parent. He was a flawed human being. But especially given that kind of background, I have to say, as the father of a son, he did the best he could, given the lack of experience that he personally had. Mm-hmm. You know, he taught me how to ride a bike. I've never been a sports guy. I don't have the coordination or the eye-hand stuff. But he tried. You know, he got me a bat. He got me a glove. He'd throw around a ball with me. If I wanted to get into football, he was willing to get me the gear. He did the best he could.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you have a parent who has been overprotected, that's really all you can ask of them.
Yeah.
Anissa?
Yeah, that is definitely true. And, I'm pagan and I go to, I'm a Unitarian, so, you know, a lot of our talking is about, you know, living your authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I take it from your calling in on this show that there has been at least a period in your life where you have felt like you were shy or self-conscious or afraid to be your real self. How did you change that in yourself? Because that's a hard thing to do.
I know. A lot of it really kind of just developed because, you know, I really was a shy kid growing up.
Did you have any kind of a mental process or any kind of an experiential epiphany that helped you start to evolve past that?
Well, I think the biggest catalyst for that, for my change, was I went to I changed schools in mm-hmm. fifth grade.
That can be a good or bad thing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that really helped a lot. Shadow Oaks, when I was growing up, from kindergarten to fourth grade, you know, I had been the victim of being bullied.
Mm.
And so I get to a new school, and...
clean slate.
It was a whole clean slate, and, you know, I really kind of, I guess, came into... my authentic self then.
Well, you know, the thing is, when you change schools or you change neighborhoods, you always bring yourself with you. So that's something you have to deal with. On the other hand, if I can make the analogy, I've been in a number of cities around the United States. And, you know, they all have McDonald's and they all have interstate freeways. And yet, they all have their own personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Every city has its own personality. Now, on the one hand, that's anthropomorphizing concrete and asphalt and steel. And yet it's a reality. People act differently. People treat you differently. So when you go to another school, this can always be a good thing or a bad thing. But that school, in terms of the, what's the term I'm looking for? The totality of the group of people in that school, it's going to have its own personality, and it will either be better or worse or the same.
Mm-hmm.
In your case, you were fortunate. You actually had a more inviting and friendly environment you went to.
It was. I had met some new friends, especially like in junior high, because everybody's new then. And they had talked me into visiting to going with them to visit Tallawood Baptist. And so, I was an Easter Christmas Christian, so I wasn't,
I was a high holy day Jew, so there's a lot of that going around.
but it was a wonderful experience. I made a lot of friends. I joined choir, and that really caused me to, branch out and finally catch up, as far as like maturity level or whatever, come into my own.
Well, I am happy for you, and I'm glad you shared your story. I appreciate it, and I thank you very much for calling tonight.
Thank you.
All right, take care. You're listening to You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. My engineer is Egberto Willis. I'll be sitting in for him this Thursday at 3 p.m. For his show Politics Done Right, because he's flying off somewhere, man. He's just always on the road doing the activist thing. I have a lot of admiration for that. I kind of threw away, I posted a blog post about what the show would be about. And if you're tuning in and finding this isn't that, it's because I do have some spontaneity in my soul. And I was listening to queer voices coming into the studio, and I decided that the topic of shame and shame resilience and a sense of vulnerability and the need to have a certain amount of courage in order to try to change that in yourself to build more opportunities, I just thought that was a topic worth discussing more, and I decided to ask their guest to stay over, which she did. Christina Tutt is a licensed master of social work, and we're talking basically about those topics. And you could be a gay person or a straight person or a trans person. As a person, many of us struggle with issues of shyness and self-consciousness, and sometimes shame for various reasons, and a fear of putting ourselves out there where we might be insulted or rejected or made fun of. So this is really a universal topic, is the reason I decided to take the opportunity to ask Christina to stay on. So we do have open lines, by the way. This is an open forum of sorts, but this is pretty much the topic right now. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We'd be interested in your experiences, challenges, processes that you used in order to perhaps overcome or try to overcome what you felt was, in some senses, a disability, a disabling shyness, a disabling self-consciousness. So let's talk a little about those processes. I know what I did to help myself get a little more courageous in how I deal with the world around me and the people around me. I'm on the radio, which obviously means that I'm not quite as shy as I used to be. So what kinds of processes can people use if they find themselves in situations? And it may be different for young people versus adults or young adults. What kinds of mechanisms or options do they have?
The curriculum is really about...
about the curriculum. We haven't really talked about the curriculum.
So it's called The Daring Way. It's based on the research of Dr. Brené Brown. She has interviewed tens of thousands of people and does qualitative research in a style called grounded theory, which is where she doesn't start out with any particular hypothesis. She just goes out and collects data, and then the hypothesis and the theory comes out of the research. So this is how she came up with her definition of shame and all the other definitions that she's developed in the, she has several books and another one coming out in a couple of weeks.
I might as well ask you, do you have a website?
I do.
What a shock. Okay, let's get the website out.
It is inspirationaloutcomes.com.
Inspirationaloutcomes.com.
That's it.
So I guess to get back to the question, though, in a more general sense, mm-hmm. what kinds of methods, mechanisms, mind games, if you will, can a person employ if they want to try to overcome shyness or self-consciousness or a tendency toward embarrassment in groups?
Mm-hmm.
What can a person, where would you start? Where does the average person start mentally, emotionally, to try to get past that and become more socialized?
The big key that comes out of the research is that you really need to know that you have someone. So the whole thing, it deals in metaphor, of course. It's an easy way for people to grasp non-tangible concepts. And so they talk about, you know, you're going into the arena, which is any sort of difficult thing you're doing, like asking the girl out to dance or
anytime
going...
there's more people than you.
Not even necessarily.
The social arena.
Well, it could be even an internal. Could even be an internal thing. Like, I really want to speak up and share my idea about this business thing or this family thing or this whatever thing. And if you never say that, no one ever knows that was going on, but it's still a struggle that you're having within yourself.
So where does someone begin?
So it's very important to make sure that you have someone who you know is always on your side. Your empathy.
Let's start with a scenario where a person has many acquaintances but no close friends. So they're on their own, and they're on their own because of this this self-inflicted or naturally internalized shyness.
Mm-hmm.
Let's assume this worst-case scenario. Where would that person begin?
That's really tough because at some point you have
to. If it was easy, I wouldn't be asking you.
Well, I mean, at some point you have to be willing to push yourself beyond your comfort zone, or that's not going to change. I mean, these are not things that are just intrinsically going to change because you turn 30 or because you get a promotion or any. There's no measurable sort of framework for that. So if you find yourself in that position and realize, hey, I don't really have any really close friends, only acquaintances, then you have to be willing to sort of push yourself to move beyond that. So putting yourself out there, trying to, they talk about the curriculum. I know I keep going back to it, but this is the whole framework for what I'm doing. they call them marble jar friends. And so you're putting marbles in the jar and building trust. And those are your closest people. So what are you doing to put marbles in the jar with someone else? What is someone else doing for you? And are you recognizing those efforts, or are you just sort of sweeping them under the rug because you're not ready to accept that level of friendship? If I have people in my group who say that they don't feel like they have any close friends, one thing that I really try to do in the group is help create a bond between the group members. But of course, if you're that far within, then you're probably not going to sign up for a group like this in the first place.
There's that.
So.
Self-limiting.
Yeah.
I'll share my particular experience. When I was divorced and when I became single again, one of the decisions I had to make was not to be the shy person I was before I was married, or else I would simply be repeating the same life I'd already had.
Right.
So there were singles groups and social groups, and occasionally they would advertise here and there. And I have to tell you, the first couple of times that I intended to go to one of those, I got my suit and sports jacket, my tie.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, there were a couple of times I got as far as the door. I got as far as the person taking the $5 or $10 to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Turn around and left.
But you made that conscious decision to put yourself out there.
Like the third time mm-hmm. I went in, and this group was like a weekly thing, and I went several times, and eventually I made a friend. And that made all the difference. But I had to be alone
right.
and uncomfortable and a little bit of a wallflower for the first several times after the times I had turned around and gone home.
Right.
And I mean, I've now had that friend for almost 25 years. He's been a really solid friend for me, and that was my good fortune.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone has good fortune at that time.
Right.
But, you know, I think for people out there who have social mixing issues, sometimes it just takes that.
Absolutely.
And it's hard.
It's very hard.
It's painful. And I'm not going to laud myself for having done it, because there are many things in life that I should have done that I didn't. But that particular thing, that was something that I had to make my mind up to do, or I was going to live a very different kind of life from what I hoped for.
I had the same experience of sorts when I was deciding to come out, that I thought, you know, I can try to hem-haw around it and see what happens. Or I didn't want to do that, though. I wanted to get out there and meet people and do, you know, I was living in Cincinnati at the time and found out about a coming out support group.
You were young at the time, if I remember from conversation on
Queer Voices. I was about 18 or 19. And so I went to the coming out support group 3 times and sat in my car in the parking lot and didn't go inside, but watched all the people as they came and went and thought, you know, was kind of sizing them up, you know, and thought, am I going to fit in there? I don't know. And so finally,
really not that different from anybody going to an unfamiliar social event.
Not at all. And when I finally went in,
because it's all human experience.
When I finally went in, it took me another couple of weeks before I ever spoke. And then when I finally did, of course, I found lots of, not of course, but in my fortunate situation, I found lots of acceptance and made some friends, and that changed everything.
That first step, I don't want to make it sound easy.
Yeah, it's not easy.
It's not easy, because if you are that kind of person, it is automatically hard.
Mm-hmm.
By definition, it is hard. So if you are shy or self-conscious or feel that something about you is embarrassing or shameful, the challenge really is just to try to get outside yourself. And, you know, the first time it may not work, and the second time it may not work, and the third time you might go to a group where maybe you're not so well accepted. But sooner or later, if you keep trying, you can. I'm not going to say you will, but you can find a place where you are comfortable and
mm-hmm.
where you can blossom a little bit and where you can start to build self-confidence that helps to eat away at that shyness and
sure.
self-consciousness.
Yeah, I think the key is sort of trying to see where you see yourself in the future and how do I get there.
Yeah,
and if I'm okay to be a shy person, a wallflower with no close friends forever, and I'm just, you know, maybe I'm very close to my family and that's okay for me, then that's okay. And you live your life in that way. But if that's not how I see myself, if I don't see myself as, you know, being single and very shy and without close friends, if I see the opposite of that, then I can't just expect those things to happen to me. I have to get out and make it happen.
You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. We do have open lines. We do invite callers to share their experiences or ask questions or just chat with us, 713-526-5738. If you happen to check in on the show's original synopsis, this ain't it. I on the way into the studio, listening to Queer Voices, listening to Christina Tutte, I just decided, you know what, this is an important topic for a lot of people, and it's something that doesn't get enough discussion, and it isn't just an LGBT issue. It's shyness. It's shyness. And there are a lot of shy folks out there, of which I still consider myself one, recovering shy person. 713-526-5738. So, we talked a little bit about the internal effort that has to be made in order to get past this fear of embarrassing yourself in public somehow,
mm-hmm.
whether through rejection or people not wanting to chat with you or whatever. So I realize that you specialize mostly in LGBT community, but mm-hmm. what kinds of situations can you create for yourself, and how could you go about it that can help this process go as least painfully as possible?
I guess it depends on what sort of arena you're trying to jump into.
Let's say it's nothing grand. You know, you're not mm-hmm. necessarily looking to do a radio show. You're not mm-hmm. necessarily looking to do self-improvement seminars. You just want to get to a place where you can go to a party and have a good time, or you can go to a business meeting and feel like you're able to interact equally with everybody else and you shouldn't be embarrassed about what you say or mm-hmm. how you look or how you act. So how do you start taking those steps? I mean, some people have talked about Toastmasters mm-hmm. just not because they want to become great speakers necessarily, although they hope to do better, but because it helps them learn to be comfortable speaking before others. We're not even talking crowds.
Mm-hmm.
Toastmasters, there might be 5, 10, 15 people there. That's hardly a crowd. But when you're shy, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
So what kinds of opportunities do you think there might be from your knowledge? Let's talk specifically Houston, if you know of mm-hmm. anything specific.
I think, well, I know that Meetup is a really fantastic resource. It's an online, you can find people who are getting together in any sort of genre. It can be really powerful just to be together and sharing space with people who have common interest. And so if you are really into Halo, then you find a Halo meetup, and it comes to mind because it's what Jonathan was talking about.
Somebody, a group where you can be as nerdy as you want to be.
That's right, if that's your thing.
If that's
then,
your thing.
Or if you're into music, then you find, you know, when is your favorite band coming to town? And maybe you go to that show and set a goal of introducing yourself to one person. Or when you know that you're going into something with a shared interest, it's a lot easier to put yourself out there.
Now, when you talk about internet chat groups, internet meetups, or in this case, the specific group meetup, mm-hmm. although I don't want to single them out, you do have to talk about safety.
Sure.
Because people at the other end of a computer screen can be anything they say they are.
And oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what? Let's just talk a little about precautions.
Okay.
If you're looking to take this step, how can you take this step and be bold while still being careful?
Make sure that you're not going to someone's house, I would say, if you're meeting through a meetup. So what they do is it's people with a common interest and they say, hey, let's meet up at this place at this time. If that
place
happens
preferably
to be someone's personal address, I probably would not go there,
right.
Certainly not alone. So anything that's a public space is much safer than going somewhere alone. If you have someone that can come along, and I know that's kind of...
That's a second step
bumps
sometimes
up against, right, what we're originally talking about. Of course, if you don't have to go alone, then that's helpful for safety as well. Make sure you let people know where you're going, at what time, and you know, what time you expect to be back, and just trying to be safe that way.
You know, I've always been interested in science and technology, and particularly science fiction, to the extent that it also helps you kind of imagine things in mm-hmm. science and technology. And for me, getting involved in science fiction conventions was a great liberator.
Yeah.
Because if I wanted to talk about Star Trek or the movie The Time Machine or Doctor Who or any of these esoteric topics that most people would yawn.
Yeah.
This is a place where people don't
it's
yawn. They get very
interest.
Emotionally involved in the worst Star Trek episode or the best Doctor
it's very
Who
powerful.
Villain. And you know what? If that's the only environment where you're comfortable, you just need to find more environments similar to that.
That's right. It's another place where the internet can be your best friend.
Oh, searching.
For
man.
Searching. Yes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Where are these people going to be, and when's the next big this concert or this convention?
There are horror conventions.
There's everything.
There are fluffy animal conventions. There are My Little Pony conventions.
Mm-hmm.
There are science seminars. There are things having to do with historical meetings or Maybe you're a Civil War buff and you just want to meet people that are interested in the Civil War. I mean,
we're very fortunate to be in such a big city where there are, you know, if it's not a convention, maybe it's a talk that someone's
right.
giving or another kind of introductory this or a class that you can audit or a something where you're going to find like-minded people with similar interests. That's the easiest way to make connections.
You know, I'm going to give a little bit of a plug. Leisure Learning.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
Such a variety of stuff. You can go, I think it's llu.com, if I'm not mistaken. Ted Weisgall runs that. He's a member on the board here, which is why it's a little bit of a plug. but it has such a variety of things, you know, whether it's political discussion or computer learning or political talk, crafts, mm-hmm. trades, business,
cooking classes,
art. So that is a place you can begin.
Absolutely.
And you can go to their website. And even if you don't take one of their classes or go to one of their events, it can open ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe, well, I don't think I like the look of this class, but the topic looks interesting. Why don't I see what else is going on in that topic?
Yeah, that's a great suggestion.
So I mean, this is really a subject that's always very close to my heart because of the arc that I have had to travel in mm-hmm. this regard. The circumstances of my life are such that I feel like now being more outgoing, being more openly verbal, adapting to crowds, not perfectly, but much better. I actually feel I am now more the person I was born to be rather than the person that my experience and environment sort of turned me into over a number of years when I was going to school and whatnot.
Congratulations. Not everyone makes it to that point.
But it's important to me to know that this is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to others to know that you can make changes and it's not easy. And I'm never saying it's easy. One of my favorite sayings is that good advice is easy to give and hard to take. I've learned that
so
the hard
true.
Way. So, you know, with a grain of salt, I say the things I'm saying. And Christina, what she's saying to you, you might say, oh, yeah, well, that's easy for her to say. Or that's easy for him to say.
Mm-hmm.
But people can take baby steps.
And that's all it takes, you know, a couple of baby steps. You see the result of that, and it encourages you to keep going. And, you know, when those results start coming, I mean, if you're taking the steps in the direction that you want to go, you will see results. And they may be tiny, and they may be almost immeasurable, it seems, but they are there. And if you keep moving in that direction, you just see more and more, and it can encourage you to keep going.
And, you know, if you take the proper attitude toward it, you can go someplace where, you know, if it's a social environment where you're going to meet a significant other, maybe you'll feel some rejection. Or if you go to an event and you thought it would be interesting, but somehow everyone seemed to be friendly with each other and you couldn't find a way in. But, you know, the lesson to learn there is you survived it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like any lightning bolts came down from the sky or spotlight pointing you out where they said, look at the oddball there. You survived it.
Yeah.
And sometimes surviving an uncomfortable experience is that baby step.
Absolutely. There's a really good piece in the research that talks about the self-compassion that you have to have when you're making these efforts and trying to undergo big changes or even small changes. And my favorite line is, do you talk to yourself the way you talk to someone that you love?
I talk to myself all the time.
If you think of...
Apparently,
you know,
Einstein felt only geniuses did that.
Well, hooray for us.
Yes.
So if you have, you know, if your mother or sister or someone very close to you was undertaking the thing that you're undertaking and felt like they had failed, would you say to them, well, that was really stupid. Why did you even do that? Most likely no, even though that's the way we talk to ourselves. So trying to be compassionate to yourself and say, hey, you know, I tried. I put myself out there. It didn't go the way I thought it would. But, you know, kudos to me for getting outside my comfort zone.
You know, you raise an interesting point. You were talking about it in the context of what you speak to yourself, your mm-hmm. internalized voice. But I think there's also the issue of being around negative people.
Oh, yeah.
People that tell you, yeah, I don't think you should do this. I mean, radio, being on radio, people don't generally say, yes, you should definitely go out and do that. I was speaking with a young lady, daughter of a friend, last night, and she's 12, and her father is a very accomplished person in science and medicine, and she may go that route herself, but apparently what she likes is acting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I pointed out to her that 90% of people who try to be actors never earn enough money to support themselves. And of the 10% that do earn enough money to support themselves, typically it's barely.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 1% of those people become the people that are in the tabloids, that earn millions of dollars, that everybody's heard about.
Right.
So the odds of success in an endeavor like that are slim. Success in any endeavor, there are various percentages of slim. And yet, the point I always make to her is, or to anyone when I have that discussion, someone ends up doing it.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many great names in science or politics or acting or the performing arts that at some point some teacher or some agent or some critic said, you know, you really suck at that. And you know what? He or she might be right. You might suck at that. But sometimes they're wrong. And
you never know till you try.
You never know till you try. I guess if one person tells you you suck and the other person tells you you're great, what you need to do is do it enough to get a consensus.
I think it depends on your definition of success.
And by the way, that requires a high tolerance for rejection.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're talking about already a whole different level of personality
right.
at that point.
Yeah, most very shy wallflowers don't aspire to be famous actors.
Well, but you know, most comedians tend to be depressives.
It's a deflection. It's an escape. That's your shield.
And you hear actors
humor.
Saying that they went into acting so they could be someone other than what they are mm-hmm. when they're not acting. So, I mean, there are all kinds of different rationales and strategies and mind games you can play with yourself to find a thing you like. You know, I ended up starting around 1991 or thereabouts. I became involved in community theater. I did a show at the Brazoria. The Brazos Bend Community Theater. I did a few shows. I actually spent several years being associated with Playhouse 1960 up near Willowbrook Mall. I did stuff on stage. I did a little stuff off stage, and you know, it was a lot of work. In addition to making a living mm-hmm. between rehearsals, I don't absorb lines well. There are some people that can read a script a couple of times and they start to get it. Man, I just have to hammer it in. I hate people like your daughter. And
I won't tell her you said that.
Thank you. But it's nothing personal. Except, you know, I hate people like that. But, you know, I invested, just the rehearsals alone were about 20 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because I spent a lot of time on the road at that point, driving from job to job, I had a cassette, and I would read my lines into the cassette, and I would put it in the player in the truck, and I would just start listening and then speaking along with it, and it was hard for me, but that's how I learned my lines.
And did that feel like success to you, to be pursuing that avenue that you had dreamt up?
It felt like success to me. The first show I did.
Even though you weren't making a living at it?
Oh, no. I've never gotten any money for it. I take that back once I got money for it. The first show I did was The Mouse That Roared. And that was, my God, I wish I could remember. I really would love to give them the plug. At the time, they had their theater at the Sharpstown Mall, I think it was. And in any case, I was given the role of President of the United States.
Mm, how prestigious.
Yes, it was. And it was hard. You know, I hadn't done theater since, like, high school.
Oh, wow.
I was literally in high school. The last show I did, I was literally a spear carrier. You know, you hear
limited
about...
Limited lines.
Yeah. I mean, I was literally a spear uh-huh. carrier. And when I came out on this show, I had to come out. There was a spotlight on me, and I came from back behind the audience, walking out to the stage, you know, like the hail to the chief thing.
Oh.
I had the first line in many scenes. Occasionally, I blew a line. Occasionally, someone else blew a line, and I had to recover. And I have to tell you, that experience alone, the fact that I survived it, the fact that I never made a complete fool of myself, only a small fool occasionally, those kinds of things where you put yourself out there and cross your fingers and you fear great disaster,
mm-hmm.
and it just doesn't turn out as bad as you thought it might. And those kinds of experiences help a lot.
Oh, yeah. That's how I feel about my current career endeavor. No clue how it's going to turn out, but I have to try.
And what is the name of that career endeavor again?
Inspirational Outcomes.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Oh, you're good at this.
I try. You know, I have my shyness, and I'm always afraid. You know, I'll share this with you because I think it is relevant to what we're talking about. When I first did a show on AM radio back in May of 2010, I was on for about 7 months. And the very first orientation that I had from the executive producer, who basically would do a lot of the engineering for me. And my first show, I fumbled, and then I was like, I'm sorry I said that. And at the end of the show, he gave me, I think, the best advice I've ever had for radio, and probably for most things. He said, if you make a mistake, if you get a brain freeze, if you misspeak yourself, you know what, just forget it. Radio audience changes in typically every 15 minutes. Mm. People are in a car. They listen while they're in the car.
Right.
15 minutes, they get where they're going. They get out of the car. So most of your audience has changed every 15 minutes. If you don't mention it, for the majority of people out there, it never happened. It probably means more to you than it means to them. And if you continue to dwell on it, it will mess you up for everything you're doing past that because you won't be able to focus or concentrate.
That is wonderful life advice.
It is great radio advice, and it is also terrific life advice.
Mm-hmm.
And again, coming from a shy background, that advice is easy to give and hard to take. But over time, doing show after show after show, an hour a week, it sort of became second nature. And that's kind of how I treat it now. As long as I don't say anything that becomes viral on Twitter, where I become like this target of vitriol,
mm-hmm.
as long as that doesn't happen, I feel like I've had a good day.
That seems to be an easily attainable standard. How's it going for you?
So far, so good. But, you know, I've got Egberto out there who kind of protects me a little bit. I think we're done for the night, pretty much. Yes. Egberto, what do we have? About a minute? There's the music.
Oh.
So perfect.
Good call.
You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston with my engineer Egberto Willis with his show Politics Done Right Thursdays at 3 p.m., which is what I'll be doing this Thursday. And you can also go to my website, thinkwingradio.com. You can go to
inspirationaloutcomes.com,
which is Christina Tutt's enterprise, where she'll offer you mechanisms for trying to overcome some of your personal inhibitions. I hope this has been helpful to some of you folks out there. It's, again, a subject close to my heart, and it's something that's meaningful to me. So take care. Politically speaking, just remember, if your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't try so hard to suppress it. Take care. I'll speak to you Thursday.
Pacifica bylaws amendments have been proposed and may
callers.
Now be found on the Foundation's website at pacifica.org for review and the upcoming vote by the board and delegates regarding said amendments. You are listening to Pacifica Radio, 90.1 in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, KPFT.org online. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at KPFT Houston.
Why donate your car to KPFT? You can free up space in your garage, you can avoid the hassles of selling your car, there's no need to pay hefty car repair bills, and you turn that unwanted car into an IRS tax deduction. In addition, you're helping to make the Houston area better with unique arts, music, and culture. You help keep options on the airwaves. Best of all, making a car donation is easy and always free. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Thanks for your help. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.